WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Well, thanks for listening. Another busy week on the WPHM Morning Show. We started the week with a visit from an intriguing candidate for governor of Michigan. No surprise that former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan is running for governor. Look at the turnaround he shepherded in the city of Detroit. But what caught a lot of people off guard last year was his decision to run not as a Democrat, but as an independent. We talked about that with Mike Duggan when he visited Port Huron and WPHM earlier this week.
Well, no matter where you go, people are fed up with politics as usual and the toxic relationship between the parties. But you know what the issues are in this state. Our third graders are not reading. We're near the bottom of the country. Our young people are moving out at very high rates. The housing isn't affordable. And people want to know the jobs of the future are going to be here. And it's really interesting. It doesn't matter what part of the state I go to. You'd be surprised how similar the concerns are.
Democrats haven't been able to fix it. Republicans haven't been able to fix it. How come?
Well, what you've seen happen in this state for years, we're a purple state. Every couple of years, we swing back and forth, Republican and Democrat. And the schools are maybe the most troubling. 60% of our third graders across the state of Michigan don't read at grade level. If you think about what that means for the future of the state, but we've gone from 19th to 44th in the country in our eight-year-olds being able to read. And every 2 years, the Republicans and Democrats in Lansing switch the curriculum, switch the school standards, switch the textbooks. And the teachers and the principals are just saying, just let us teach. But you look at the states in this country that have made enormous progress. They teach the kids phonics. They put them in small group settings. They have tutoring when they fall behind. And they have a single curriculum they stick with. None of that's Republican or Democrat. And I'm wondering if maybe we can have a Michigan strategy, because I never thought I'd see the day that Michigan would be near the bottom of the country in our K-12 education.
Everybody points at Mississippi and talks about the Mississippi miracle. What do they do that we're not doing?
So I've spent time with the superintendent of Mississippi, and if you were to drop her here in Port Huron, you would love her. It's common sense. She says, we need to teach phonics, which is the way I learned to read. She has training for the teachers and backs them up. She has the kids in the small group settings, and they focus on the lower 25% in every school. What is your plan to bring the lower 25% up? If you don't catch them up in third and fourth grade, by the time you get to fifth and sixth and seventh grade, we've stolen their future. But it is about a clear plan and accountability, and nothing about Republicans or Democrats trying to blame each other or take advantage of the issue is going to help.
Those kids that do learn how to read, get a college education, seem to move away from Michigan, right, and they're not coming back. Why is that, and how do we retain more people here in this state?
When in the city of Detroit, of course, we've come back in an enormous way in the last 12 years. We had 200,000 people leave the city of Detroit in the 10 years before I got elected. Now we're leading Michigan in population growth. But I had to sit down and say, what is it going to take to bring young people back? You have to have the jobs of the future, and that includes the tech jobs. You have to have affordable housing. I am shocked at it. I go to Traverse City, and the number one issue is affordable housing. I go up to Marquette, where they can't fill the entry-level jobs in the hospitals because of a lack of affordable housing. We are driving our young people out. In Detroit, we built 6,000 affordable housing units in the last 6 years, which is part of why we're growing. And the other thing we did was we took advantage of our riverfront and just built spectacular parks out that are gathering places. If you can put affordable housing, job opportunities, and a good quality of life, you can keep our young people here. And right now, there's two places in the state where the young people are moving back to. It's Detroit and Grand Rapids. We need to have leadership at the state so they're coming back to communities all over Michigan, because we have plenty of beautiful communities in this state.
People look at we're talking with Mike Duggan, independent candidate for governor of Michigan. He had been a Democrat and decided not to run for governor as a Democrat. How come?
You know, in 2022, the Democrats got the so-called trifecta, the Democratic governor, Democratic House, Democratic Senate, first time in 40 years. And I thought, Now is the chance to do the things we want to do. And I brought in the Detroit legislators. I said, let's put the money back in the schools. We've taken a $1.3 billion a year out of the schools. When we raised that sales tax from 4 cents to 6 cents in the 1990s, that was promised to go to K-12 education. The Lansing politicians have been taking that money away year after year. I said, let's put the money back. Let's create an affordable housing fund at the state level. The state's never helped on affordable housing. And they all said, yeah, let's do it. I went up to Lansing and I saw what happened. The Democrats refused to engage the Republicans on anything, which means you had a 56-54 majority for the Democrats in the House. That means they needed 56 out of 56 votes on everything. I was up there when we proposed the affordable housing fund. First thing that happens, a couple of the legislators on the far left, you haven't taken up our landlord rent control bill. If you won't take up our landlord rent control bill, we're not voting on affordable housing. And it fell apart. We said, we want to put money back into the schools. And they said, two or three again on the left, we want a bill that guarantees transgender athletes can play in girls' sports. And the leadership said, those are two different issues. Let's take them up separately. Said, no, no, if you're not going to give us everything we want, we're not putting the money back in the schools. And I kept saying to the Speaker of the House, Joe Tate, who's my rep and my friend, you're better off dealing with the five most reasonable Republicans than the five most unreasonable Democrats. And he said, Mike, you don't understand how Lansing works. If I did that, I'd be voted out as Speaker. And that's the point I realized. If I ran for governor as a Democrat, I got all the same problems Gretchen Whitmer has now. All the Republicans line up against you because you tried to beat them in their rep and Senate races. The left wing of the Democratic Party is not a big fan of mine. And I'd be a governor who couldn't get anything done. And I looked at this and I said, I have no interest in being a governor who can't accomplish anything. But what would happen if somebody ran who didn't choose between the two parties? And if you look at the Gallup surveys going back to the 1980s when they ask Americans, do you consider yourself a Democrat, a Republican, or independent? This year, Democrat, 27%, all-time low. Republican, 27%, all-time low. Independent, 45%, all-time high. The answer is sitting right in front of us, and I thought I'd give people a third choice.
Michigan has been sort of a bellwether state for a long time, one of those really important states on the national stage. If Michigan were to elect an independent governor, that would raise some eyebrows across the country, wouldn't it?
It would, and I have a lot of Republicans and Democrats supporting me. Of course, I raise more money than Benson or James, which shocked everybody. But what people are saying is this. They aren't necessarily looking to scrap the two-party system. They want the two parties to behave better, to actually solve some of our problems. And I'm starting to get national interest now to say, let's show the two parties they don't own our votes, that if they're going to keep behaving the way they're behaving, we can have a third option. And so I think there are people across the country watching this race to say to the two parties, you either be more responsible, we're going to find alternatives.
Now, here's the challenge. The two major parties have deep wells to draw from, and running a state election is expensive. There is no independent party out there that's going to fund your campaign. How's that aspect going?
Well, anybody who wants to help, go to MikeDuggan.com. I'll take $10, $20, whatever you have. So far, I've out fundraised the Republicans and Democrats. But here's what's going to happen. After the primary is over, there is huge national money. In fact, most of Benson and James's money has come from out of state already. They're holding multiple California and Texas fundraisers. These folks don't care about third grade reading in Michigan. They want the Republicans or Democrats to control the governorship so when it comes to the 28th presidential election, they have an advantage. And the only way I'm going to compete is if the people of Michigan decide that they're going to get behind this campaign. At least so far, people of Michigan have been extremely generous. But I know the odds are against me. I know the national Republican and Democratic money is coming in here going to try to quash the independent. But, of course, if you've been watching the polls, I went from 15%, and they said, as high as he's going to get. And then in May, I was at 21%, and they said, as high as he's going to get. Now the January poll, I'm at 26%, just a few points behind him. They said, well, this is the highest he's going to get. The two parties are so busy yelling at each other, they don't feel the ground shifting underneath their feet. People want another choice.
Give me a quick civics lesson. Remind me how the primary works. Are you going to be on the primary ballot?
No. No. So in August, you will pick a Democratic and Republican nominee for governor by filing 12,000 signatures. I'm on the ballot in November. And so I'm going around the state. The beauty of this is the Democrats run to the left to get their nomination and the Republicans run to the right to get their nomination. I actually say the same thing to every group I go to in every part of this state. And so November 3rd is going to be Independence Day in Michigan. And that's I will be on the ballot.
Independent candidate for governor of Michigan, Mike Duggan, a guest of the WPHM Business Network this past week here in Port Huron. Well, we've experienced prolonged, very cold temperatures. Single-digit and sub-zero readings started last weekend and continue this weekend. It has prompted some to wonder what the city of Port Huron is doing to help people who lack adequate warmth and shelter. The Blue Water Ally Center has been open and available at night, and the Blue Water Area Rescue Mission has been on the status of Code Blue. That means men and women are allowed to stay at the shelter. Usually it's just men. Port Huron City Manager James Freed says it's something the community has been addressing.
The St. Clair County Coordinating Services Body, which is a group of almost like 45 to 75 nonprofits, are thinking about that.
Yeah.
They're planning for it well in advance. We have plans in place for cold weather there. There's one thing about Michigan is we know it's going to get cold every winter.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives us ample amount of time to plan ahead to ensure that we can keep our people safe. We do have the non-housed population. There are most of them are by, some of them are a lot of them are by choice.
Mm-hmm.
Not most of them, but a lot of them are by choice. We offer them, do you want to go to shelter? And they prefer to stay in their car or they have a place to go. We have a lot of folks with mental illness. Who need care and need to be sheltered for. And so when it gets really cold, we have facilities that stand up. We identified 5 warming centers in 1 overnight shelter, which is B-Warm, which is our designated overnight shelter in the city. They do an excellent job. Throughout the past week, they were busy, but they were never at capacity. They ran a code blue status, which means men, women, children, anyone who needed a place to go, you go to B-Warm.
Mm-hmm.
I think the B-Warm does an amazing job. Now, in the past, the city has funded some of their capital improvements, but operationally, they run all on donations. They don't want government money for operations because when you take federal and state money, there's a lot of ties. And so they rely on donors across the city, churches who help fund them. My wife and I help fund Be Warm. I would encourage all the listeners right now, if you want a worthy charity to donate to, it's Be Warm, the Blue Water Area Rescue Mission. They are very nimble in staff. Your money's not going towards administration. Your money is going towards warm blankets and food for folks who need it. They really do a tremendous job very efficiently. I see a lot of nonprofits that don't operate efficiently, so my wife and I are very picky on who we donate money to because we don't want to go to waste. And I see a lot of waste, but they do an excellent job. Our police officers are extraordinary. When it gets cold out, they actually know where the homeless and the non-housed people are camping out at, so they go and check on them. You need a place to stay tonight? It's really cold. Let's get you someplace. Our officers, that care and compassion that our officers show to go look for people on cold nights. And then if, you know, maybe a shelter isn't the right place, we'll put them up in a hotel. In fact, there were several instances last week where officers, they have a special fund. And in an agreement with some hotels where they can take people for the night to get them out of the cold. And our officers did that last week. But we're all human, and we would never want to see a fellow human being stranded in the cold. We will never let that happen. As a city, we have too many resources. We have too many warm places and too many buildings to make sure that no one is ever out in the cold. And so we will take whatever extraordinary measures is required. You know, if a tornado hits the city and 1,000 people are out of homes, we'll open up McMoran and have people in McMoran. We have the Palmer Center has a generator. The Harvey Center is now on generator. And when there's we don't open those until there's an extenuating circumstance like a power outage.
Yeah.
If there's a massive power outage, we're open centers that will have power so people can come to. Was it last July or 2 years ago? I honestly can't remember. The years flow together. Mm. We had a power outage in the South Park. We opened the Harvey Center. And thank you for that. At that time, it was under the control of Port Huron Housing Commission. So Jim Dewey immediately opened the Harvey Center as a place for people to come. And we had someone coming just to plug in their nebulizer to do their breathing treatment. Things you wouldn't think about.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a breather. You know, I'm not. My mom did. So just some place to plug it in to get their breathing treatment 3 times a day. And so we have to think about people in a human sense. This is being city manager gets to be a bureaucratic job, but at the end of the day, it's the human touch. It's the human interaction that really makes a difference. And so I think everyone did a great job. I think even Blue Water Allies opened an overnight warming center. Kudos to them. They're right in downtown. I think the director told us they had 20 people over a 3-day period or something like that. That's pretty remarkable. So people step up in our community. That's what we're known for. Port Huron, we take care of ourselves.
I mean, we do. And I think everybody, you know, anybody that commented at the meeting the other night, or people that have been saying, well, why didn't we this or why didn't we that, are just concerned for people in this extreme cold.
Absolutely.
There's a difference between living in your car or choosing to be, you know, in a situation where you don't have a home. As you said, not everybody, but some make that choice when it's 30 or 40 degrees versus 1 or 10 below zero.
Yeah, and I think you also have to think about, like, we don't just wait around until it gets cold, like, oh no, let's open a shelter. Running a shelter is very complex. There's a lot of regulations, fire codes, state regulations. You have to have staffing minimums, you know, client staff ratio. You have to have security protocols, security training. There's just a whole complexity. So that's why we fund professionals. So instead of us just rushing to open a shelter, we pre-plan and fund professional nonprofits who know how to do this and stand them up well in advance of an emergency so that we are ready when it comes. Because we know it's going to get cold in January in Port Huron. Mm-hmm. We know this. And we're prepared for this every single year. There's not a, you know, this is not a crisis. This is not an emergency. We are well planned out. We have a process in place to take care of people.
If somebody does find themselves in a time of crisis, they are suddenly without a warm place to stay. What?
Call Central Dispatch and have an officer come get you.
They'll do that.
We'll send an officer to you. Good. We'll send a police officer to you, and we'll get you help. We are not going to let anyone be stuck out in the cold.
We're talking with James Freed, the Port Huron City Manager. Later today, you will address. You'll give your State of the City address. I don't know if you want to spoil it or tell us what the state of the city is. But besides cold, what is the state of Port Huron right now?
So fantastic, of course. It's under great management, Paul. Why would you even ask such a question?
You told Mike Duggan the other day.
Yeah, you did tell Mike Duggan that. Why would you even ask? That's just such a silly question, Paul. I really think the state of the city is not how government is doing. And so tonight you're going to hear from me for about 2 minutes, but I have a host of people I want the community to hear from, the people who are actually doing the good work, the stakeholders, the nonprofits, the philanthropy, the people who are truly making positive change. Government sets the table, but we don't cook the dinner. Okay. And so I want to make sure that the people who are doing it are, I want the people to hear directly. I think there's a lot of stakeholders out there that I know about and you know about. But does the everyday Joe out there going out their lives, working, taking care of their families, do they know that this stuff's going on? Do they know who these people are? And so tonight will be a showcase of people in our community who are doing monumental good. Government's doing some good stuff. We'll talk about that real briefly. But I really want my wife to come. And if she thinks I'm going to speak for more than 5 minutes, she will not come. And so to get my wife there, I have to keep it under 5 minutes to let other people speak.
She's seen your prepared remarks.
Yeah, you know, it's like, listen, if people want to come, they're not going to come if James Freed's speaking. I used to be able to sell a ticket, but not anymore. So it will not be the James Freed show. It'll be other people. I want to highlight other people and the good work that they're doing because I see it every day. It was what makes me excited. For the last 12 years, every single day I wake up and I work with extraordinary people and extraordinary organizations who are doing really good things. We've accomplished so much, and we'll talk about that tonight. But that's what makes me excited about the future. You know, what's extraordinary about living in the city of Port Huron is we're on the sunrise side of the state. And, you know, we don't look to the day that is gone. We look to the day that is coming, to new sunrises, to new opportunities, and to a hopeful future. This has left me with far more than a perspective. It's left me with an outlook. I believe that tomorrow is going to be better than today. I believe that the future holds great promise for our city. And to the citizens of Port Huron, the night is passing, but the morning will soon come, and we are ready for it.
Port Huron City Manager James Freed with us on the WPHM Morning Show this past week. A lot going on at the Port Huron Museum, a big anniversary coming up this year for the Thomas Edison Depot Museum, a big fundraiser in the works, and a new exhibit opens this weekend called A Seat at Our Table. We talked with Sarah May and Depot Dave Dazer from the museum, and Emily Reitzel came in to talk about her new exhibit.
This is the third year we've done this, working with, we've always worked with some great partners, the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, the community at large. So this year it's called A Seat at My Table. It's examining the Black experience through the lens of family history, genealogy, and heritage. So the past couple of years, our artists have created chair displays that express their experiences or outlook on life. This year we expanded it bigger to tables. We were encouraging families to do it together. So it's been cool to see a little bit of twist on what we've done in the past. So.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's going to be open through the whole month of February?
Yep. So it's opening this Saturday, January 31st from noon to 4. We'll have a free open to the public opening reception, and then it'll go through March 1st. So,
front. And special things all along the way, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we have a packed February. Every Saturday in February, we'll have a program over at the museum in tandem with the exhibit. We've got all kinds of stuff. Lots of lectures, speakers, worship dancers. We have a variety show put on by the NAACP and Youth Council. And then we wrap it all up at the end of the month with Taste of Soul on the 28th, which is a huge event at the museum that we love to host. It's another free event. All these events are actually free in February. But that's a tasting event from soul food, Caribbean food, African food. It's super, super cool.
Sounds great. And people can find out more about that on the website?
Yep, on our Facebook, on our website, our Eventbrite. All those events are live. They're all free, but we do have tickets up if you want to make sure you reserve your spot.
All right.
And we were actually saying just before coming in here, Paul, such a cool community collaboration.
Really is.
Of this event and exhibit coming together. I was telling these guys when my office is right off one of the galleries, so I love opening the door and listening to them. They have so much fun putting it together. I love listening to their story. They're talking about all their stories while they're putting the exhibit together. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fantastic group of ladies who have so much passion for it. And it's just, I think we're really super proud to be a part of
it. It's really exciting.
Yeah. It's got to be one of the great things about watching an exhibit being put together is hearing those stories that go into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I love working with people, because sometimes I can be in my own little bubble doing my research. And but it's awesome to have people, real people coming in and telling their stories and their history. So.
Yeah. Museum's all about. What else is going on?
So I have an event that I'm kind of the lead on. So it's Marvelous Museums. It's our second year running. It's Saturday, March 7th at St. Clair Inn. Of course, we're loving to capitalize on the historical venue that we have in the community. It's a brunch. Last year, the food was amazing.
So good.
We're so excited about that again, working with the St. Clair Inn. We have all kinds of raffle baskets. We have some musical entertainment. We'll have a really short program. We like to get everyone in and out. It's a great chilly March Saturday morning thing to do. Doors open at 9:15. It starts at 9:30. Goes till 11 o'clock, and we try to keep it short and sweet, but it is definitely one of our big fundraisers for the museum. So we have tickets available. We have table opportunities that save you a little bit of money on tickets. We have sponsorships available all on our website. All the sponsorships include tickets to the event. So, yeah, we're super excited about it.
A great idea to do a brunch. Everybody does a dinner. Everybody's got evenings. And you start to look at your calendar, and every Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening is full. Do a brunch, right?
Yeah, yeah, we love it. We had a great turnout last year, so we're hoping to capitalize on that, maybe bring a little bit more people in for it. But, it was a great start last year, and we're hoping to build on that every year, Paul.
All right, very good. March 7th, make sure you get your tickets for that. Depot Dave, good morning.
Good morning.
The Edison Depot Museum is about to celebrate a birthday, isn't it?
Yeah, it opened February 11th, 2001. So it's 25 years coming up. We're not going to have the celebration in February, though. It'll be on June 20th. We've got some really cool events. We've got an Edison impersonator coming in for a few hours. Came highly recommended from my friends at the Edison Birthplace Museum in Milan, Ohio. He actually lives here in Michigan. He's very excited about it. He's been to the museum, thinks it's great. He's going to make a whole weekend out of it for his wife and him. That'll be fun. We're going to be making cylinder records with people. I know you did that on one of our visits.
It's such a cool treat to be able to do that,
What else? We've got snacks, apple pie, which was Edison's favorite snack. His friend said he ate it by the yard. What else? We're going to have some Edison experiment activities for kids up in the train car. So that's going to all just be included in the price of admission. So it's not necessarily a fundraiser. It's just I'm calling it more of a celebration than a fundraiser. We're not trying to, capitalize on it or anything. Just celebrate 25 years. And on the actual anniversary, I'm pretty excited about this. Everybody who's involved at Greenfield Village at the Edison sites there, the Menlo Park Lab and Machine Shop and all the different buildings, they're all coming to visit the depot on February 11th. They want to learn more about Edison's boyhood in Port Huron. So
that is really cool.
I'm excited about it, and so are they.
And February 11th is Edison's birthday, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow. You can find out more about all those things at the Port Huron Museum by visiting their website, phmuseum.org. I'm Paul Miller. Thanks for listening. See you on the Morning Show Monday through Friday, 6 till 10, here on WPHN.